Thank you very much. It's nice to see a lot of familiar faces in the audience and some new faces. Very pleased to make everybody's acquaintance. The topic that I would like to address this morning is one that is really very, very close to my heart. And that is the training our children in midos so that they can become a kli, so that they can become a vessel to contain all the Torah that we want to teach them. You know, I saw a news item early this morning that the government in New York is in the process of passing another law about the kind of food that they will be that will be reimbursable by the government that programs give to young children in daycare and early childhood centers. So, you know, there was a whole hoopla this year about the 20 and the big soda, the sugary sodas, and that's become very evil, and we have to, for sure, get rid of that. And now it's that there should be no cookie snacks, only fruit and vegetable snacks, and other things. And I remember the whole hoopla about checking all the schools for asbestos in the insulation, and before that, checking all the schools for lead in the paint on the walls. And what is the common thread? The common thread is that we want to provide a healthy environment in which our children could learn, right? Because if we're trying to teach them how to live or information, tools, skills that they need for life, and at the same time, you know, we're impeding their health in some way, so that we're at cross purposes. So it's very clear and logical that children should learn or have the opportunity to learn in a healthy environment. What I want to talk about is creating a healthy internal environment within the person so that they can learn. So, you know, good midos, I think, sometimes has a bad rap. If you learn the beginning, actually, of the Mesilas Yesharim, he really, in the beginning of the Mesilas Yesharim, he has a whole piece about how people who become very pious, and that's not as a positive, but pious in their character development, even way back when the Mesilas Yesharim was written, were considered to be like simpletons. Why? You can't do anything more heady. You can't do anything more intellectual than, you know, than be frum and pious and work on your character development. And of course, the Mesilas Yesharim comes to counter that notion. So good midos really isn't just about being a good person who can get along in society. For that, every person in the world knows they need to become socialized, they need to develop manners, but that has nothing to do with midos. I remember, just anecdotally, many, many years ago, Rabbi Shlomo Freifeld, Alav HaShalom, used to speak in shul, in the old Shor Yashuv, down in downtown Far Rockaway, down Central Avenue, close to Mott Avenue. So he used to speak after shul at the Kiddush. And I remember one time something that he said that I was so offended. I took me a long time to try and understand what he meant. He said, you know, Jews don't have manners. And I was so offended by that. My mother brought me up with manners. Like, what does it mean that Jews don't have manners? And do you know how I finally came to begin to understand what he was saying? I began to understand what he was saying when I moved to Dallas, Texas. When I moved to Dallas, Texas with my family many years ago, the first time I went to the supermarket, it was so strange. Okay, so there was a man, an older retired gentleman, who was standing outside the supermarket. Tom Thumb was the name of the supermarket. And his job was simply to greet the people and say, "Good morning, ma'am. Is there anything special we can get for you today?" And I remember coming from New York, the first time that happened, I looked over my shoulder to see who he was speaking to. That's manners. It's very polite. They wouldn't think of letting you carry your bags to your car. which I have to tell you is really very, very pleasant. But really, if chas v'shalom, a person fell down on the street in Dallas, Texas, I'd rather be on the streets of Yerushalayim than the streets of Dallas, Texas. Because you know people, and that's midos. Midos are the real things, the intrinsic things. Okay, now, what I want, the first point that I really want to start with, and I know I have such a short time, so I'll try and hit the points, and then maybe we'll review them. And this is really the first integral point, which is that good midos are not functioning as a good person, but functioning as a healthy person. The Sifsei Chaim, Rav Chaim Friedlander, in his introduction to his, what I think, anyway, in his magnum opus, the Sifsei Chaim on Midos, two huge volumes on Midos, he talks about bad Midos as being a choli, as being an illness. In other words, when a person functions through the lens of bad Midos, they're functioning in a way that they were not meant to function. Right? If a person is walking, has a cast, and they're walking with crutches, so they're still walking, but a healthy person doesn't have a cast and doesn't have crutches. I'll give you a specific example where he says it very specifically. In the midah of Ayin Tova, which is the ability to see the positive in people and situations and to want good for people, that's the midah of Ayin Tova. He says, Rav Chaim Friedlander says very specifically that the person whose eye functions with a Ayin Tova, that person has a healthy eye. And a person whose eye functions with an Ayin Ra'a, that person has an unhealthy eye. Now, from our sources, we see, this is the next step, point number two, that good midos are not only important for good functioning. And I might add, I'm not going to talk about these at length just because I don't have time. They're also critical for being a happy person and being able to be successful in a relationship. But for our purpose, this is an educational conference, I want to share with you some sources that spell out so clearly how intrinsic good midos are in order to create that vessel, that kli, that allows Torah to be absorbed. Okay, starting with Perkei Avos. Okay, Perkei Avot, Ethics of the Fathers, Chapter 3, Mishnah 17. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah Omer. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, and there's a list of things that he says. Among them is, Im ein derech eretz, ein Torah. If there's no derech eretz, there's no Torah. Rabbeinu Yonah explains. Rabbeinu Yonah is a Rishon. That means his work is unbelievably authoritative. No one after him can challenge him. Listen to what Rabbeinu Yonah says. I wrote it down in the Hebrew. I'll read it. I'll translate it. Rotze lomar, what the Mishnah is trying to tell us, shetzarech techila letakein atzmo, I think I lost a piece of it. Okay, I see there's a piece missing. Okay, so I'll just have to say it in the English. I see this, I somehow must have backspaced and lost a piece. Okay, that a person has to be metaking himself, b'midos, that with midos, because that is what the Torah allows the Torah to reside with him. She'enena shochenes la'olam beguf she'eno ba'al midos. Oh, I see what happened. Okay, that the Torah will never dwell in a body that is not the owner of good midos. And he says, it's not possible to say that you will learn Torah and then, after that, you will acquire midos. He says, ki e efsha. It's impossible. It's impossible. You know, I'll tell you something interesting. I work a lot in the field of Kirov Rechokim. And I spoke recently, this past year, I spoke at a national conference for Mikarvot, for women that work mostly in College Kirov campus, College Campus Kirov, across the country. And there were many people there who are very, very successful at what they do and really have changed the lives of so many people. So one person said to me, and my husband had the same experience where he was a little bit before that, where a very successful Mikarevet said to me, you know, I'm on a college campus with thousands of Jewish students. I have only so much time and so much resources. I have to decide where I'm going to put my energies. There's not enough energy to build a relationship with every person. So this woman said, I look for the students who already have good midos, because I know that there is earth in which the Torah can grow. And this is very unbelievable. Let me give you another source. Rav Chaim Vital, primary student of the Ari, great Kabbalist, in his Sefer Sha'arei Kedusha, okay, and this is from the first Chelek, Sha'ar 2. He says, therefore we find that when the bad character traits are established in man, he refrains from fulfilling Torah and mitzvot. And even when he does fulfill them, it will not be for the sake of heaven, but for more base motives. King Solomon describes such a person like a gold ring in a pig's snout, which is a verse from Mishlei, from King Solomon's Proverbs. In other words, again, same point, that good midos are a prerequisite to learn Torah. And you know, one of the things that I loved about when I was invited to join this conference was that I loved that it addressed such a broad spectrum of the population. And I think that's beautiful, and I think that's amazing. But think about it. No matter what your educational goals are, or no matter what your brand of Yiddishkeit is, we're all trying to pass the Masorah to the next generation. If we only give over information, we're not going to be successful. Of course, the question is how to do it. We'll get to that. Listen to this. In another selection from Sha'arei Tshuva, Rav Chaim Vital asks, if midos are so integral, why don't they appear as one of the 613 mitzvot? It's a good question. Don't you think it's a good question? Right? And he answers, it's because they are the preparation for mitzvah. And he says, he gives an analogy, like an architect who wants to build a house. Okay, it goes without saying that he's going to build the foundation before he builds the house. Okay, last source, just to make the point, and this was unbelievable. The Vilna Gaon, in his sefer called Even Shlema, in the first perek, the second section, says these words. I translated them, I looked it up, I translated them word for word. The main life purpose of a person is to strengthen himself in constantly breaking his bad midot. And I'll quote to you in Hebrew, V'im lo, lama lo chayim. And if not, what purpose does his life have? He uses the word constantly, very strong. Okay. Now, there are issues with the things that I've just said. It's very nice, it sounds good, but I have two issues with the things that I've just said. One is that how are we supposed to get the good midos if they have to precede the Torah? Isn't learning Torah the way that we grow? Isn't learning Torah the way that we develop? So all this talk about good midos preceding Torah, like how do we synthesize, or how do we address this? Okay. So in that same parak of the Vilna Gaon's Even Shlema, He says something that is so mind-blowing that I must share it with you. We do see, unfortunately, sometimes where people who are quite scholarly don't seem to embody all of the ideals, midot, that Torah represents. Listen to what he says. He says in Evan Shlema, first chapter, 11th paragraph, Torah makes you more of what you already are. Torah makes you more of what you already are. And he gives a mashal. He says, the earth is a fertile ground in which things can grow. It requires rain to activate what's in the ground and make it grow. Now, when the rain comes and things grow, there are many different types of things that can grow. Wheat that can feed hungry people can grow, or poisonous mushrooms could grow. Gorgeous flowers could grow, or weeds can grow. And he says that Torah is like the rain that comes into the soil, that comes into the earth, and makes whatever's already planted inside there, in the person's heart, makes that grow. I thought that's amazing. But that leaves us with really an issue. What's the issue that it leaves us with?
How do you plant
the right things in the person's heart? And I'll tell you, I'll make it even stronger. In that same paragraph, which is really worthwhile to look at, and in that whole chapter, he discusses that really some people come into the world with a much more difficult, fundamental set of midot than other people. Anyone that's a mother of children knows that kids come into this world wired in certain ways. Now, chas v'shalom, we should look at them as bad. That defeats all of our purposes. But certainly we realize that some are just harder to work with than others. I mean, that's a reality. So he says an unbelievable thing. He says that even though people come with certain intrinsic difficulties, that the purpose in their life is, like we said before, is to overcome these difficulties, and that this is possible because he has, as he calls it, the koach habachiri, the power to choose. I'm going to tell you at the end a story. Let's talk about, so basically, I didn't fully answer the question. So let me deal one more minute with the issue that we raised about which comes first, Torah or Midos, and just deal with that. So I saw both in the Mesilas Yesharim and in Rabbeinu Yonah and in the Vilna Gaon like this, that there is an aspect of Torah that if you learn it, and this piece is just from Dessler, with the intent of wanting to improve your midos, that aspect of Torah will help you. And that is to learn the ma'asim, that the stories that the Torah brings, and to learn the ethical aspects of Torah, like Pirkei Avot. You know, Rabbeinu Yonah, in talking about why we learn Pirkei Avot on the summer afternoons, you know, Shabbos afternoons in the summer. Listen to what he says. How far away are we? He says, because, you know, it's so nice out in the summer. And it's so pretty out. And people are just going to be tempted to just, like, stroll the afternoon away. That should be the worst thing people are doing. Right? And so, like, we need to, like, bring them back to the focus of what they were put on the planet, for. But anyway, so just to conclude this part, and then just to go into a few minutes of very practical things of how to accomplish this. So Torah is absolutely critical. Midos are absolutely critical. Without creating a container of Midos, we can pour all the fine wine of Torah into our children, into ourselves, into our students, and we will not be successful. Because there will be a hole in the bottom of the cup, and the only thing that can plug that hole is really tikkun hamidos. So it's critical. Which comes first? Midos or Torah? Fundamental midos have to come first. The desire to improve your midos have to come second, and then you can use Torah as a resource to do that. Now, in terms of how to accomplish this, best approach. So clearly, it seems that the best approach is to come from a home of good midos. Unfortunately, that's the ideal, and not everybody has that privilege. School is second best, but it's a good opportunity. Think how many hours, waking hours of a day, a child spends in school when they have a dual program, right? In Israel, they're home at 1 o'clock, but here they're not home till 4 or 5. So it is a tremendous... I want to quote to you from a study that was done by Dr. Ben-Sion Saretsky. He published the paper, it's online, you could read it yourselves. Very fascinating paper on this topic. And he talks about teaching midos in the direct method versus the indirect method. The direct method is a lot of what we see in terms of what they call, in Israel, they call it like a mivtza, like a contest, you know, and chesed hours and making prizes, like very proactive, you know, positive reinforcement type of approach. He calls that the direct approach. The indirect approach, which he concludes and seems clearly to be correct, the indirect approach, he concludes is much better, is the idea of just modeling midos. And I think personally that there is no more important place for a person to express their midos tovos than a parent to a child or a teacher to a student. Many, many years ago, in one of the local schools, I was asked to come do a teacher training seminar for students in an elementary school, trying to sensitize the teachers to the halachos, really, and the perspective of Shmiras Halacha. You know, he writes, Dr. Saretsky, like this, that many times when he presents this idea of the indirect approach, he's challenged that, what do you mean, I should just model the right behavior? But what about discipline? He says that people feel that they're going to be remiss at their responsibility to educate if they don't purposefully discipline and teach. Say please. Say thank you. They once did a study like this. This was a secular study. Walk into any third grade classroom, anywhere in the country. Stand in front of the students and say, you could just walk into the classroom and say, children, what do you say? What will they all say? Thank you. Because we teach our children to say thank you. But much more important than teaching your children to say thank you is saying thank you to your children. You know, there's a mistaken notion that the Bein Adam L'Chaveiro mitzvos do not apply between an adult and a child. And in Choshen Mishpat, it is clearly stated that Bein Adam L'Chaveiro requirements apply between adults and children. Just because someone is small, they're still a person. And the more we keep that in mind, the better outcome we are likely to have. Basically, the idea is that any midah that you want to train for, you have to give that midah to the person you want to train. So if you want to train for savlanas, for patience, so you have to be a savlan. You have to be patient. If you want to train for kavod, for respect, then you have to give respect. You know, it is a fascinating thing. I learned this in the Sefer Ohel Rachel. He has a beautiful treatment of this, where Rav Schlanger says that if you go through all the halachos where there's kibud, where there's a requirement for respect, you see that in every single case, whether it's parent and child, teacher and student, Rav and congregant, Navi, Melech, king, that wherever there's a requirement for kavod, the requirement is mutual. A child doesn't have the same, a parent doesn't have the same expression of kavod to a child that a child has to a parent. A teacher doesn't have the same expression. The teacher doesn't need to stand up when the child comes in the room. The student comes in the room. The student needs to stand up when the teacher comes in the room. But yet, a teacher and a parent is required to teach their, to show respect to their child. And showing respect, I'll give you the one-line definition. Comes from Rav Yechiel Yaakovson in Eretz Yisrael. The one-line definition of expressing kavod means to indicate to the person through your behavior that they have an internal and therefore eternal being. That is the best definition of kavod that I have ever found. It means you relate to the person for who they are intrinsically, internally, and eternally. That's the giving of kavod. And I want to tell you something that I worked in the field of kids at risk years ago. It's one of the things you never can completely get out of that and shachanos, right? Bring a shachan. Like once people hear you do that, you're sunk forever, right? But I want to tell you something. The thing that I learned more than anything is that what children need is, yes, they need us to love them. But first, they need us to respect them. And love that's built on respect is a very different kind of a love than love that's handed out like candy. It's much more meaningful. It's much more effective. It makes the biggest difference. Okay, I'm pretty much out of time. I'm going to take about 1.5 more minutes. And I'm going to just tell you a few examples and maybe a story. Okay, I had a young man. Hashem always sends me the examples. This week on Friday, a young man that I know from a long time ago because he's the child of an old, old friend of mine called to ask if he could come Friday night. So I wasn't sure what his status was. So I said to him, "You're welcome to stay for the whole Shabbos." And he said, "I'll see, but I'll come Friday night." He walked in Friday night in his jeans and his flip-flops, had the yarmulke on his head, and we had a wonderful meal with him. And he stayed till quite late. Unfortunately, he didn't stay the night. So way after dinner, we were schmoozing, and he went to school with my son, who's still home, and they were reminiscing. So he says, "Yeah, I remember exactly. The ninth grade." They went to elementary school together, not to high school together. "The ninth grade. I walked up the steps on the first day of ninth grade. And the Menahel, the principal, was standing there. And he said, 'Oh my goodness, another Schwartz.'" Okay, the kid turned around, walked down the steps. His parents put him in a different yeshiva, and he lasted there 5 weeks. He was a very brilliant kid, very precocious, challenging. He wanted to be in yeshiva at that point, but it was hard for him. He had a little television, like a little portable TV set, hidden in his things, and one of the kids snitched on him and told the administration that he has it. They went through his things. They found it. They asked him to leave the yeshiva. He told us that he came home. He went in his backyard. He made a bonfire. In the bonfire, he threw his hat, he threw his jacket. And today, Baruch Hashem, because of a lot of hard work, is a very functioning person, but one of the first things he'll tell you is, I'm not from. Okay. On the other side of the spectrum, read Rabbi Breifeld's book. Read his biography. That's how to educate with midos. I'll just tell you a very short anecdote, not from him, just because it's shorter. But my youngest daughter, when she was in high school, the one teacher that made the biggest impression on her was probably the hardest teacher that she had. She was stern. She was hard. She demanded a lot from the girls. She had the biggest impact on my daughter because of one thing that she did. When the bell rang, even if she was mid-sentence, not only mid-sentence, she was mid-word, she stopped. And she said, we can continue another time. Recess time or in between period of time is your time. I'm not allowed to steal your time. The fact, that level of integrity, ad kedei kach, that a woman, you know, as a teacher, I can tell you, sometimes you're so passionate about what you're saying, like, you just feel like you're not going to be able to sleep tonight unless you finish saying it. But that ability to stop on a dime and say, no, this is your time now. It's not my time. It belongs to you. That's midos. Okay. I'll end really with just one story, just because it's cute and it makes the point. So, a man in Israel, Taradik man, finishes his education and goes to apply for a job in the Ministry of Education in Israel. So they give him a whole psychological evaluation, and one of the questions that they ask him, they have to fill out a whole form, and one of the questions that they ask him is, in what area of your life do you most want to improve? So he wrote down in his midot. So the interviewer is looking through his form and says, what do you mean you want to improve your midot? Like, you're as big as you are, because midot in Hebrew means your measurements. You know? You're as big as you are. So he says, not those midot, character midot. So the interviewer, who is a secular Israeli, says to him, I'm so, so sorry. Those midot you can't change. And that is not our view. Our view is that our midot we can change. And we can educate for midot. But the biggest achrayus to educate for midot is upon ourselves. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Okay, let's enjoy your day.
You did that so well. Okay.